Welcome to the Uncrowned Wrestling Show. Solomonster here for Tuesday, June 9th, 2026. It did not go well for the Knicks last night. 13 straight wins. Turns out 13 was an unlucky number after all. But they're still up 2-1. If they pull it out, and I have every belief that they will, WWE is coming to Madison Square Garden on July 18th for Saturday night's main event. If Danhausen doesn't appear on that show, I don't know what we're doing here. Just the pop that he would get will be insane. You know, he cursed another team, the Carolina Hurricanes, who are battling the Las Vegas Golden Knights for the Stanley Cup. They aired a video of him on the big screen the other night cursing the Hurricanes, and they went on to lose the game in double overtime. And with the Hurricanes down 2-1 in the series, one of their fans paid the $250 in human monies for a Danhausen cameo, asking him to reverse the curse, which he did. He cursed the Golden Knights, but he did warn that he's done a lot of cursing lately, and his powers may be stretched thin. So we'll see what happens in that series. Let's get right into this, because we have an update on the WWE shareholders lawsuit. The trial was to have started yesterday in Delaware, with all of the big names being dragged into court to testify. Vince McMahon, Nick Khan, Paul Levesque, Ari Emanuel, Mark Shapiro. But it was mysteriously pulled from the docket the other day, and now we know why. ESPN.com had a story up by Andreas Hale, the same Andreas Hale who was denied credentials to WrestleMania this year and saw his access to talent blocked by the company. But he did a write-up on this. Vince McMahon and WWE senior leaders have reached a last-minute settlement with shareholders to resolve a class-action lawsuit that would have challenged the WWE and UFC merger. The settlement prevents the potential of documents pertaining to McMahon's sexual assault allegations and hush money scandals being made public. The trial, which suggested that McMahon manipulated and steered WWE into a favorable deal with Endeavor in order to secure control of the company, was supposed to start on Monday, but it has now been canceled after the parties reached an agreement in principle. If the trial would have proceeded as planned, the discovery process would likely have seen the shareholders request that McMahon turn over all documents related to the sexual misconduct allegations, along with payments made to his accusers. The documents would have reflected McMahon's state of mind at the time of the merger. The lawsuit from WWE shareholders was first filed following the merger in 2023, which saw McMahon return to power after his resignation in 2022, when the allegations of sexual misconduct initially surfaced. McMahon eventually resigned from the board in January of 2024 after a former WWE employee, Janelle Grant, alleged that McMahon had trafficked and abused her. Even though the Delaware lawsuit is now settled, the lawsuit filed by Grant against McMahon is still ongoing. And it says here that Bloomberg Law was the first to report of the settlement being reached on Sunday. That is not true. Actually, the first person to report on any of this was Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics and Post Wrestling. And he has been like a shark in covering all of this stuff, including the Janelle Grant stuff, but especially on the shareholders lawsuit. He's done a lot of really good reporting on that. This is not a huge shock, coming off the judge in this case sanctioning McMahon and Khan for acting recklessly in the way that they used the Signal messaging app and changing their settings to automatically delete messages that they were supposed to preserve. Basically, they destroyed evidence, is what they did. And you know, for two guys who were supposed to be super smart, they were pretty goddamn stupid. And so because of that, the burden of proof, which normally would rest on the plaintiffs in a case like this, had now shifted over to the defense, which was going to make their case a lot harder. So between that and McMahon apparently feeling that a trial would make his other lawsuit harder on him, they felt the need to settle. For how much, we don't know. We may never know. This was not a lawsuit against WWE. I don't know that we're going to be seeing that in the next TKO earnings report. So we may never know exactly what the settlement was for. It's going to be interesting, though, because it'll be paid to the shareholders. And they were seeking up to $950 million. How that money will be paid out is going to be interesting because, again, it's going to be paid to the shareholders, of which Vince McMahon is one. He may be the biggest one, in fact. I would imagine there would be an exemption from him being paid because, I mean, that would be ridiculous now, wouldn't it? Money in the Bank continues to get bounced around like a basketball at MSG. It was already scheduled to be the latest Money in the Bank pay-per-view that WWE has ever done. Typically, it would take place in June or July, but originally it was scheduled for late August in New Orleans. New Orleans got it because they were supposed to get WrestleMania this year until Nick Khan and Mark Shapiro decided, hey, we made so much money last year and got some nice tax breaks, we have to go back to Vegas again this year. This is even after they had The Rock go out on TV last year and announce that New Orleans was going to be the host city. They changed course, and so as a make-good, they gave them Money in the Bank. So that was announced for August 29th. Then they moved the date back a week to Labor Day weekend on a Sunday this time, September 6th. Well, I hope you didn't make any early travel plans, because it has been moved once again. Now the event will take place on Saturday, October 10th. Delay, delay, delay. I said Money in the Bank is the GTA 6 of WWE. Fightful claims it was changed due to a scheduling conflict with broadcast partners. But on Raw last night, they announced a new event will take its place on September 6th. Saturday night's main event in Atlanta, Georgia. Only it's on a Sunday. So it'll be a special Sunday night's main event. Now, last week, you heard me talk about Chad Gable and that incredible mask versus mask match with El Grande Americano Kaiser at the AAA show. Top to bottom, just the best pro wrestling presentation of anything all year, anywhere. Just great, great stuff. And Chad Gable was unmasked, and he entered as the villain. He left as a hero. He promised to come back to AAA at some point, somehow, someway. And the hope was that they would be able to really capitalize on this, not in AAA, but on the WWE main roster, and finally do something with this guy. Because it's been over a decade that he's been in this company, and he's better than what they've had him doing now for a very long time. So he showed up on SmackDown Friday in Italy in a backstage segment. He was there to meet with Nick Aldis, but he was also there to meet with Rey Fénix, who is the new AAA Cruiserweight Champion. Speaking of people they haven't done anything with on the main roster. But there he was. He was in the back. He was hanging around with some of the lower card guys. And Chad Gable approached him. He was asking for forgiveness for his past transgressions, because he mocked Lucha Libre and made fun of it. And he said, having gone through everything he went through, he has learned about the respect for it, right? He wanted to fly all the way to Italy just to look Fénix dead in his eyes and ask for forgiveness, which he got. And then Fénix told him, he goes, you know, I'm not the only luchador that you need to be asking forgiveness from. Basically, without saying his name, saying that his brother Penta is another one of those people that he should probably go have a chat with. And so the apology tour continued last night on Raw in Paris, France. And he confronted Penta. Penta was on the show last night to defend his Intercontinental title against Rey Mysterio. They had a very good match. Penta is still the champion. But as he was getting prepped and warmed up in the back, Gable approached him, and Penta was understanding, and he forgave him. And then Penta told him, again, there's somebody else that you should probably go talk to and ask forgiveness from. And that was Rey Mysterio. Him and Dragon Lee, they were in the back. And Gable, it's like it's part of a 12-step program here. He's got to just confront all of these people. He's got to make up for past mistakes. So he went to go ask for forgiveness from them as well, which they gave him. And at the end of it, Ray told him, you know, even before you started putting on the El Grande Americano mask, there were certain people that, you know, you may not have treated right. So you might want to go approach those people as well. Again, without saying so, basically intimating Alpha Academy. Now, I mentioned the title match that Ray had with Penta. Very good match. Ethan Page and Rusev, they went on the attack when it was over. Out comes Chad Gable to make the save. And I love that he came out to his old NXT American Alpha music when he and Jason Jordan were all teamed up. I haven't heard that theme in forever. I don't know if he's going to keep it or not. All I know is that I loved hearing it again last night. And he charged down to the ring, and he was like a man possessed in there. He's doling out German suplexes like he's Brock Lesnar. He's throwing these guys around. He took Rusev, who's not a small man, and he dumped him high up into the air, and he folded him on the back of his neck, and he's just going crazy in there. And it ended with him picking up Rey Mysterio's mask, which Rusev had ripped off his head, and he was all, you know, cowering and covering up his face on the mat. And Gable picked up the mask. He kind of stared at it. and he handed it back to them so they could put it back on Ray's face. And so, you know, obviously he's a babyface now, unless this is all some big swerve, and he's not apologetic at all, we find out, and he's still a heel, which I think would be terrible. I think this is the time for the babyface redemption arc for Chad Gable. And so far, so good. That's the direction they're going in with it. He got a great reaction. So the play here has to be, in my view, as I watch this and we see here we're in, June. SummerSlam is coming up at the very beginning of August, August 1st and 2nd. The play here has to be him challenging Penta for the Intercontinental Championship at SummerSlam, which just so happens to be taking place in Minneapolis this year, which is Gable's hometown. He is from Minneapolis. It makes all the sense in the world for him to win the title there. And if the timing would have worked out better, what I would have done, I would have had him in the King of the Ring tournament, and I would have had him win the entire damn thing, and then challenge Cody Rhodes on that show. But I'm of the mind on this, go big or go home. Not everybody is going to agree with that. But I believe that this, and I said this the other day on my other show, I said, this man has been the most underutilized, underappreciated talent on that roster for a very long time. And it's about time that Triple H realizes what he has in this guy. If that mask versus mask match didn't wake him up to that fact, then nothing will. Like, it's now or never. You know, you either shit or get off the pot when it comes to Chad Gable. But him hanging around Alpha Academy and doing all the stuff that he was doing before, you know, that stuff goes out the window. You know, if he's going to go apologize to Alpha Academy for how he treated them and treated Otis and all that as like a one-off, I mean, that's fine. But I don't want to see him hanging around those guys because, you know, the fans will judge you based upon who you are hanging around with any given week. You know, when he was milling around with Alpha Academy, you knew these guys were at a certain level. Chad Gable is ready to move on to that next level. And it's very important that they portray him that way on television and try to give him that credibility. And hanging out with Alpha Academy is not going to do that. But again, it's now or never. If he doesn't get the big push now, it ain't going to happen. Now, Eric Bischoff on his 83 Weeks podcast said something very interesting about Gable sniffing around Real American Freestyle, of which Bischoff is a co-founder. He said, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Chad Gable is a phenomenal, phenomenal amateur wrestler and is kind of sniffing around Real American Freestyle, just throwing it out there. We're talking about it. There's some contractual issues that can kind of make that difficult, but we're having discussions and relatively serious ones, so I think it's just a matter of time. So he didn't indicate whether or not he's having direct discussions or they are having direct discussions with Gable or his agent or WWE, but he's saying here that they're serious discussions and it's only a matter of time. So where there's smoke, there's fire. Now, I know they've had a bunch of UFC fighters and ex-fighters appearing on Real American Freestyle shows on their last show, which was, I think, a little over a week ago, Gable Steveson, who just signed with the UFC, I think, in April. He won his match. Colby Covington and Chris Weidman, they wrestled on that show. So there's at least been some cooperation there with UFC when it comes to using certain names. UFC and WWE are both under the TKO umbrella. Maybe that makes it easier for them to reach some sort of deal to allow Gable to wrestle there. I know when Gable competed in the Olympics in 2012, that was in Greco-Roman wrestling, which is different than freestyle. It's a risk. If he does it and then loses, especially if they're trying to give him a big push right now, that would not be ideal. But then again, CM Punk, he tried his hand at mixed martial arts, didn't have a whole lot of luck with it. And then years later, when he came back to pro wrestling, it didn't really impact his drawing power. But that could be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Maybe it opens the door for others. Now, Gable was on Raw last night in Paris, as I mentioned, but one name who was not on the show, the biggest name, was Roman Reigns. He will be back in Baltimore next week. I just love how Raw this month is going from Italy to France to Baltimore, Maryland, before landing in London, England. It's quite the detour. But PW Insider had an item yesterday on WWE having interest potentially in another Bloodline member, that being Zilla Fatu, son of the late Umaga. He was spotted at the WWE Performance Center on Monday. There has been talk of late of WWE having an interest in him. Zilla is our reigning crown jewel champion in House of Glory. Next month is actually going to be 2 years since he debuted for us. That's after being trained by Booker T out of Reality of Wrestling. And so to see his growth as a performer and as a person has been a lot of fun. I think we all knew this would eventually be his destination. It was just a matter of how long would it take? Because he's still only been doing this for, I think, 3 years. Beyond that, though, there's not a lot to say about this. I'd be shocked if WWE did not have an interest in bringing him in. That doesn't necessarily mean it's anything that's imminent, but that there would be interest there on both sides, that should not come as a shock to anybody. Now, here's where things stand in the King and Queen of the Ring tournaments. It's been very good to the Judgment Day so far, as you'll see. But there is a common thread here between these two tournaments that I'll get to in a minute, and it's not good for SmackDown. Queen of the Ring is not too surprising so far. Io Sky advanced last week. She's going to the semifinals. The only question was, who would she be facing in the next round? And we got our answer on Friday. It's going to be Raquel Rodriguez of the Judgment Day. Whoever wins that then moves on to the finals in Riyadh at Night of Champions later this month. On the other side of the bracket, another Judgment Day member, in Liv Morgan, the reigning women's world champion, is moving on after beating Alexa Bliss, Becky Lynch, and Chelsea Green last night on Raw. It is ridiculous that she is even in this tournament to begin with, but if Stephanie Vaquer was not going to show up last night, then there was no way that they were not going to have Liv Morgan go over and move on. Right? She is moving on. She will face the winner of the four-way taking place this Friday on SmackDown between Charlotte Flair, Jade Cargill, Sol Ruka, and Lyra Valkyria. Now, I don't think much of Jade or Sol's chances in moving on. I still think Charlotte is the favorite to advance. Liv is getting bounced. I mean, the only question is, does it happen in the semis or does it happen in the finals? That's really the only question. I'm pulling for Io Sky to win the entire thing. She's my pick, and hopefully she will get the crown. Now, the King of the Ring has proven to be a lot more unpredictable, which has been good and bad. I did not like Dominic Mysterio winning on Friday over Bron Breakker, Trick Williams, and Damian Priest. Trick and Priest didn't have a prayer, but it should have been Bron Breakker. Especially coming off that loss last Monday. You know, he had that great main event with Seth Rollins. He got pinned. He got beat. This would have been a nice bounce back for him, but it also would have set up a much more exciting semifinal match. I don't know why they're so afraid to give us a big match in this thing. Obafemi against Bron Breakker would have been a hell of a lot more appealing than Obafemi against Dominic Mysterio. But they really want to keep this whole King, Dom, Queen, Liv possibility going. So that's Dom, Liv, and Raquel have all advanced. Roxanne Perez is the only Judgment Day member who has been a loser so far. So Dom winning was a surprise, albeit I don't think a great one. But last night, the big upset was Javon Evans beating out Seth Rollins, Ricky Saints, and Tala Tonga to advance to the next round. Now, I know Breakker got bounced on Friday, and he's not done yet with Seth. I know that. But I thought for sure that Seth was at least going to the finals. And instead, they bounced him out of the opening round. And it was Bron Breakker who did it. Cut him in half with a spear, cost him a win. So now they get to go off and they get to resolve their issues. Whether it be at Night of Champions or Saturday night's main event next month. In fact, if the King of the Ring challenges Cody Rhodes for his title and not Roman Reigns for his at SummerSlam, I could see them making that Rollins against Breakker match a number one contenders match to see who challenges Roman Reigns in Minneapolis, because I still think Seth is probably going to be that guy. Still a very good chance we're going to get Seth Rollins against Roman Reigns. But Javon winning was a shock, and that I liked. I liked that. Good match, too. You know, people want unpredictability, and so now you're getting it. And it's not always great, but we've had a fair amount of it, I think, so far in this tournament. And at least as of last night's show, I'm digging it. You know, I like that. Because the whole thing has basically been thrown into the state of, you can't really say for sure who's going to be the one standing at the end of all of this. So now he faces one of four men in the next round, either Jey Uso, LA Knight, Royce Keyes, or Finn Balor. And whoever wins that match on Friday will face Javon. Now, notice, I want to point something out to you. Every single person that has advanced so far, male and female, have come from Monday Night Raw. There has not been a single SmackDown star in the bunch. They have completely buried SmackDown so far. I don't use that word very often because everybody does. But SmackDown has been buried so far in this. So much so, I don't see how a SmackDown star doesn't meet Javon in the next round. So that would rule out Jey Uso and LA Knight, who kind of have their own thing going on right now anyway. So they kind of cancel each other out. That leaves Royce Keyes, who's still, you know, kind of the new guy, and Finn Balor. Now, Balor is making his SmackDown debut, quote-unquote debut, this Friday after being traded. They traded him away from Raw for who, we don't know. It would be a hell of a thing to be traded, and in his first night in, he loses. Right? But the funny thing is, if he wins, that would be a former Judgment Day member moving on. So we can't get away from this fucking group. I think I may actually be leaning towards Balor to win that match on Friday. You know, the thing is, like, this can go, again, so many different ways. It feels like this is Oba's to lose. Like, how could it be anybody but Oba Femi now that Seth Rollins is out? Right? He's really the only one that really, truly makes sense. But Oba called out Brock Lesnar again in his promo on Raw last night. He called him a bitch, right? You cheat, you jump me from behind when I'm not ready. Everyone calls him, you know, the big bad beast. He's a big bad bitch. I would imagine that Brock Lesnar is not going to let that stand, right? He almost has to screw this guy out of a win either in the next round or in the finals. Maybe he flies all the way out to Saudi Arabia. He's so angry and bitter about this. He flies all the way out there just to do a run-in and fuck over Oba Femi, right? It's possible. And then we get the third match between them at SummerSlam. Wouldn't make much sense for Brock to wrestle anybody else on that SummerSlam show. I mean, he shows up so little, and there's not a whole lot of time left to build him up for anybody other than Oba Femi. But if it's not Oba winning this tournament, I just can't imagine Finn Balor or Royce Keyes or Javon Evans, you know, challenging for a world title at SummerSlam, which is why I think, this is my little conspiracy theory here, as unpredictable as some of this has been so far, there may be some funky stuff going on here towards the end. Because Randy Orton is not in this tournament. He hasn't been on television since WrestleMania. Drew McIntyre is not in this tournament. He, too, has not been on television since WrestleMania. If there was suddenly an opening in this thing, if Javon, right, were to get taken out, let's say, by someone, I could envision a scenario where one of these guys gets slotted in there. Right, that could be how they get Orton back in the mix to challenge Cody Rhodes for the WWE Championship. I mean, I'll throw Sami Zayn's name in there too. I think Sami may have other plans for Night of Champions. But if not, I could see him maybe, you know, being slotted into a spot in the finals here. And they would have to figure out a way, you know, how is that fair and all that. But, you know, if somebody gets taken out with an injury, even if it's off camera or something, oh, we have a wild card spot that's open that now has to be filled. You've got three names right there who could be slotted in. If they are, they're winning. Like, if they do an angle like that, whoever they put in there is going to win the entire thing. So, you know, we could sit here and speculate on, okay, who's going to win this? It may well end up being somebody who's not even in the tournament right now. Because they're going to want two big title matches. They got two nights. U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, two nights of SummerSlam. They have tickets to sell. And I'm sorry, Roman Reigns against Javon Evans is not going to sell tickets the way that Roman Reigns against the bigger name would. You know, Cody Rhodes against Royce Keyes is not going to sell tickets and drive interest in the way that Cody against a lot of other people would. I just can't envision that. I can't envision it being one of those people. Speaking of Cody, he and Gunther, they are headed for a rematch for the WWE Championship. This Friday, we're going to find out what the stipulation will be. And then on the June 19th episode of SmackDown, the title will be on the line. Night of Champions is only 8 days later, so you know, you kind of look at that and go, why not wait until then? Because I think we may be getting a triple threat on that show with Cody, Gunther, and Sami Zayn. I mean, he's in this now. He's in this. He is firmly a part of this storyline now. And we know that Cody is defending on that Night of Champions show because they just put the poster out yesterday. He is front and center on that poster. You know who's not on the poster? Roman Reigns. He's not even flying to Riyadh. So we're definitely getting a WWE title match on that show. Whether it's going to be a third match with Gunther, you know, 8 days later, or again, a triple threat, we'll have to wait and see. But I tend to think that they're going to work Sammy in there in some way. Again, unless he magically ends up in the King of the Ring somehow. On the AEW side, you know, Mick Foley, as we all know, is now under contract with AEW. He is All Elite. It's never official until you get the graphic, and they gave him the graphic his first night in. And I've been of the mindset, and I think I've even said this before, that there's been talk about maybe he'll wrestle there and do a match. You know, maybe, maybe not. He's going to do a match. Like, the moment he signed with AEW, he was doing a match. He himself may have been unsure of it. Tony Khan may have been unsure of it. I was not unsure of it. 100% guaranteed Mick Foley was going to be doing a match, without a doubt. Well, WrestleVotes Radio and Fightful Select reported on Thursday that according to AEW sources, Mick Foley had his mind made up that he would wrestle once more. This is my shocked face. You can't see it right now, but I've got my shocked face. And they said that it would take place in AEW. The report also noted that if Foley is cleared to wrestle, Tony Khan would be eager to book him in a match. Oh, I'm sure Tony Khan would be eager to book him in multiple matches, like he did with Sting. It just reminds me so much of the Sting stuff. Sting's career in WWE came to an end because of an injury, a neck injury. And they would just not medically clear him, so he was never going to wrestle for them again. And I'm sure he didn't want his career to end that way, but he maybe in his mind he figured, well, that's it, right? Because when he had that last match with Seth Rollins and got hurt, there was no AEW. That was back in 2015. Along comes AEW, it's 5 years later, and all of a sudden Sting signs with them. And I remember the idea at the time was that they're going to have him doing cinematic matches. And they did one, I think, and then that sort of led to regular matches. And before you know it, this guy's doing balcony dives like he's New Jack. Okay, and that was the story of Sting. Now, Mick Foley signing with AEW, you could also do cinematic type stuff with him, but I don't think that's going to scratch that itch. I really don't. I think Foley's going to want to get out there in front of a live audience. He's going to want to experience that again. He talked about like that first night when he was in Queens at Double or Nothing a few weeks ago. Like he had goosebumps and the hair on his arms were, you know, were standing up. It had been so long since he had that feeling. And I'm sure he wants to go out there at least one more time in front of a live crowd and take bumps and have that feeling again. So even if cinematic is something they had in mind, believe me, we'll see Mick Foley in the ring in front of a live audience. Now, he was actually on Ariel's show. He's on the Ariel Helwani show this past week. And Foley himself says he views himself as something of a Swiss Army knife in AEW who can help in a variety of different ways, even as a manager potentially for some mid-card babyfaces or mid-card heels. And in the ring in a match. He said, it's definitely crossed my mind. The cinematic matches have opened up the door for guys whose cardio may be suspect. But I'll tell you what, this loss of 100 pounds has made my life so much easier. I used to have to stop a couple of times just walking up a moderate hill, and now I don't even realize I'm walking up hills when I do them because I'm not really getting winded like I used to. I don't know, I think that clearly if I had a match, it would have to be a match that would avoid trauma to the head. Luckily, there's a whole lot of me to traumatize below the neck. So I think I have one last good match in me. I just believe all the stars would have to align. All the stars would have to align and make sense. If I can come up with enough of those types of moves that allow me to risk a little bit less while still giving fans a good match, and if I feel like I'm up to it, then maybe a couple of years down the road, we will look into that. Stranger things have happened. We ain't going to have to wait a couple of years. I don't think we're going to have to wait one full year before we see Foley back in a wrestling ring. I don't think Mick Foley should be wrestling, but I'm not Mick Foley. I'm not his doctor. He's going to do whatever he wants to do. And Tony Khan is going to do whatever Tony Khan wants to do. I'm sure Tony Khan is very eager to get Mick Foley in a match, and he'll be backstage marking out over the entire thing. And so my only hope, you know, as a fan of Foley's, and as someone who has also followed a lot of these interviews where he has talked about the numerous concussions that he's had, even trying to train to do one last retirement match for his 60th birthday, even doing some light training, he had to abandon all of those plans because he got concussed and didn't even realize it. You know, one of his great joys in life is riding roller coasters. He loves with his family visiting theme parks all over the country, even some of the most obscure ones. And he was an avid fan of roller coasters, and it's been probably at least a decade or more. I don't believe he's been able to ride any of them because he would get concussed just riding a roller coaster. Now, to be fair, some of these roller coasters probably would concuss me. I mean, I get concussed just watching videos of them. I mean, some of them are just ridiculous. But it's scary. You know, it's scary, and he's not a young man anymore. He's got nothing left to prove. But again, it's an itch that some of these guys, they can't scratch. They can't give it up. You know, it's like a drug, and it gets into their bloodstream, and they can't help themselves. So as a fan, my hope is this. He's going to wrestle again, 110%. When he does, I think that there is a way that they could do it very similar to what WWE did with Bret Hart. When Bret Hart came back, and Bret's my all-time favorite, so when he came back, it's like, man, I wish this could have happened, you know, 5 or 10 years sooner. Imagine the matches Bret could have had, right, against that roster. Imagine Bret in the ring with some of those guys from the Ruthless Aggression era, right? Brock Lesnar in his early years, Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, Randy Orton, I mean, on and on. He came back in 2010. This was years after he had the stroke, and he wasn't the same guy anymore. But I think he also had like a Lloyd's of London insurance policy. And in order to maintain that, there were certain limitations, one of which being he was not allowed to take any shots or blows to the head. So if you go back and you watch those matches, he never took like any direct punches to the head. He never took a move like a pile driver or a DDT or anything like that. There were some matches that he had, you know, where like Bret even wanted to work house shows. He was doing like multi-man tag matches at house shows against the Nexus. And he would always work with Heath Slater. That was his guy. Because he knew that, you know, they trusted Heath, and Heath was taking all the bumps and protecting him. So that worked for Bret. It could be something very similar with Mick Foley. No shots to the head, because he should not be taking shots to the head. A tag match would probably make a lot of sense. That's what they did with Sting. Honestly, Darby and Foley as tag team partners would probably, because Darby's the one who could take all the wild, stupid bumps. But I just, you know, look, does Mick Foley need to wrestle? No. Is he going to? Yes. Is he going to be in there with MJF? Probably. I think that's a given, whether it's a singles or a tag. I would think MJF, just the promos alone. We got a taste of that at Double or Nothing on the pre-show last month. I mean, that would be a natural one right there. Now, AEW Dynamite last week, I thought was a thumbs-up show. Really good. We had a title defense by MJF against Roosh. We had a TNT championship match. Kevin Knight defending against his now former tag team partner, Speedball Mike Bailey. There was one hell of a promo on that show from Mark Briscoe that he cut on MJF. We had the return of Mercedes Moné. First time all year that she's been back on AEW television. She was the wild card in the Women's Owen Hart Foundation tournament. And we had a wild main event in the men's Owen with Will Ospreay beating Mark Davis. Now, MJF, unfortunately, did not come out of his match with Roosh unscathed on Thursday. He was, on Friday, he was supposed to wrestle for Beyond Wrestling. And on Thursday, Beyond announced that MJF suffered a hyperextended knee on Dynamite. He would not be able to wrestle on their Friday show in Rhode Island. And they were able to bring in Andrade as a replacement and Leo Rush and Wheeler Yuta. So it was a nice make good. And from all accounts, they had a great show on Friday. I think the promoter even said that there were people in WWE who were sort of looking into how they might be able to help. So it is a legitimate injury. The knee, I know, was swollen. AEW is hoping that it's not anything serious. There's been no updates since then. Apparently it happened on a spot in the corner where Roosh delivered a knee. And there's no heat on him. It was one of those freak accidents. Shit happens sometimes. It wasn't like he was being reckless or anything like that. The hope is that it's nothing serious because, boy, would that timing be terrible. You know, he just won the world championship back only a few weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks ago now? And you're heading into, in a couple of months, right, 2.5 months, you're heading into your biggest show of the year. You're going to be going back to Wembley Stadium in London for All In. And I don't know what their plans are for MJF at All In. It is not a guarantee that he will be defending the world title in the main event. He could very well drop it before then, which also means that they're relying on him for that redemption pay-per-view, which is that new pay-per-view they're adding in Montreal on July 26th. So for him to have some sort of injury that would keep him out, even for a few months, would be a pretty devastating blow for Tony Khan. So hopefully it's nothing too serious. Mark Briscoe is someone who wants to challenge MJF. He got a win over Leo Rush, who is getting over bit by bit each week with this wacky Blackheart gimmick of his. As wacky as that all was, Briscoe took the mic after he got dead serious. And he cut this great, just money promo on MJF. They had feuded last year. The last time we saw them in the ring together, they had a match at All Out, which was in September. It was tables and tacks. And Briscoe pinned him. He beat him in that match. Now, at the time, MJF was not the world champion. Now he is. But obviously, that was in September of last year. It's now June. So they got away from it. Now they're coming back to it. That's a tough thing to do because things go cold. That's what happened with Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly just had a match at Double or Nothing with Jon Moxley. And they had a very good wrestling match, nothing overly exciting. But there was not a lot of heat around it because the last time that we saw Kyle, right? I mean, he had a thing going with Moxley last year where Moxley was terrified to be around him because he would tap out to the ankle lock. I think that if I remember, they gave O'Reilly the win. I think the submission went over him in Blood and Guts. And it was the peak of Kyle O'Reilly in AEW. And then he went away because he got hurt. He got injured. So he was gone for months. And a lot happened in that time. Jon Moxley is not a heel per se. I don't know what he's supposed to be, but it's a very different Jon Moxley now. And so Kyle came back. It just wasn't the same. Now they're revisiting the Mark Briscoe and MJF stuff. And it's like, man, how do they heat this thing back up? You know, it's like putting leftovers in the microwave. It never tastes quite as good as it did when it was still fresh. How do you heat this thing back up? Well, you do what they did on Wednesday. You put a microphone in Mark Briscoe's hand. He looks dead into the camera. He gets dead serious. None of this goofy BS. And he cuts a very serious promo explaining why he hates MJF so much. And it all goes back to, you know, his brother passed away 3 years ago now, 3.5 years ago in that horrible accident. And he just didn't know if he would ever be able to get that glimmer in his eye again for pro wrestling. But he was able to find it. And then MJF, of course, starts talking about him and his family and his brother. And, you know, he beats him in that match, and he's like, okay, I'm done finally with him. MJF went away for a little bit after that. He goes, I'm finally done with Maxwell Jacob Friedman. But then MJF came back, he said. And not only did he come back, he won the world title, and all of a sudden, all that anger and rage just returned again in Briscoe. And so now he's calling his shot. He's calling him out. He wants him. He wants a shot at the world championship. It was really a very simple story, a very simple explanation, but the way he delivered it and everything, I just thought was pitch perfect. And so the question is, when do you do the match? They have their Forbidden Door pay-per-view coming up on June 28th. I think that would be an appropriate place for it. I don't see MJF and Briscoe as like a big-time pay-per-view main event. And on a show like that, you don't really have to main event with it. Right? You're probably going to get Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland in the finals of the Owen closing that show. So you can get away with doing MJF and Briscoe on that show, especially if it's not the main event. But will MJF even be making it to Forbidden Door with the state of his knee? I guess we'll have to wait and see. The question also you have to ask is MJF even going to walk into London as the world champion? That Redemption pay-per-view is going to be a very interesting one. It's their first pay-per-view in Montreal, number one, which is a great wrestling city. We all know what happened in Montreal many years ago. We won't get into that. But it's the first Redemption show. I'm sure they're going to want to have a big main event on that show. And Kenny Omega is still in the mix. He still wants to be the world champion. They've kind of hinted at that on TV. He's been having these conversations backstage with Will Ospreay, like they're, you know, great friends. It's leading somewhere. And it makes me think like it's leading more so to a Kenny Omega-Will Ospreay match, honestly, than an MJF-Will Ospreay match. Although maybe we get all three of them in a match together. But that pay-per-view on the 26th next month could very well give us a Kenny Omega-MJF rematch in the main event. If we get that match, I cannot envision a scenario where we don't end up with Kenny Omega walking out as the AEW World Champion. They've already had him headline one pay-per-view in Canada against MJF this year and lose. I don't see them doing that a second time. So that makes things a little interesting, because if MJF drops the belt and isn't in the main event at Wembley, then I don't know what they do with him. Maybe Mick Foley. Maybe Mick Foley against MJF on that show. I don't know. So that'll be a story to watch. Kevin Knight, I mentioned he defended the TNT title against Speedball, the newly heel Kevin Knight, who I thought was going to stand on his own two feet, and then they went and added him on Wednesday to the Don Callis family. I had to double check. I thought maybe I was a member of the Don Callis family. It seems like everybody is. But Kevin Knight is now one of many, many faces in that faction. I'm kind of torn on it. I don't hate it. And the reason I don't hate it is this. Now look, it is ridiculous. It is ridiculous that the majority of male heels in this company are part of this one group. It's out of control. That being said, Kevin Knight is clearly very well-liked by Tony Khan. He has been getting a lot of screen time. He's been getting a decent push ever since the beginning of the year, coming out of that Continental Classic at the end of 2025. And he's held a couple of titles, tag titles, trios titles. Now he's the TNT champion. And they turned him heel. You don't do that unless you're planning on really pushing this guy. He reminds me, the push he's getting now and him going heel and everything, it really reminds me of Kyle Fletcher. And last year was really a breakout year for Kyle Fletcher, and him being a part of the Callis family has benefited him. I think Kevin Knight will end up in a similar spot. You know, there's people like Kyle Fletcher and Okada and even Takeshita for a while who benefited from being part of this group. I think Kevin Knight will benefit from being part of this group in ways that other people maybe don't. I'll throw Mark Davis in there too. I mean, I was one of those people. I thought Mark Davis, whatever, he's going to be a background player. He's the guy they send out there to get beat. And I felt bad for him because not only did he have injury issues that took him out for a while, but, you know, they put him in a tag team and then his partner gets injured and it's like, all right, well, now what are they going to do with him? And to his credit, Tony Khan, he kept him on television. Yeah, he was losing most of his matches, but he kept him on TV. But look where he is now. You know, he's the national champion. He just headlined the last 2 weeks. He main evented the last 2 weeks of Dynamite and had some kick-ass matches. That match on Wednesday was insane. The crowd was just electric for it. It was overbooked as all hell. I mean, my God. But it worked. Sometimes the overbooking can work, right? WrestleMania 40 is a great example of that. The big payoff in Philadelphia with Roman and Cody. I'm not saying this was Roman and Cody, but I'm just saying all the run-ins and everything and the cameo appearances, but the people were going nuts for it. But there were people who have benefited from being part of the Callis family. I think Kevin Knight's going to be fine. I would have liked to have seen them at least try to have him stand on his own. He just went heel. And it's like right into the Callis family you go. It's like, okay, all right. It is weird, though. You know, he's talking about how he wants to be Jet Two Belts. He is also called that MJF. He wants to come after the world championship. And I guess Don Callis is the vessel by which he will get there. He will get to the world championship. Except, you know, Don Callis has not... He's not managed a world champion in like 5 years since Kenny Omega. It's been a while. There's been a drought. I don't know why he thinks he needs Don Callis to get there. Mercedes Moné is back. The former TBS champion. She made a surprise return as the wild card entrant, given Willow Nightingale had to pull out due to injury in the Owen, and she got a win over Alex Windsor. So Mercedes is moving on to the next round. The only real surprise here is that this Alex Windsor match with Willow was supposed to happen on the pay-per-view last month. And then Willow got hurt, and they could have done Windsor against the wild card there. And I said, well, it's probably not Mercedes because they ended up, you know, bumping the match off the pay-per-view. They did Athena against Mina Shirakawa instead. I said, if Mercedes is coming back, you would think they would want to save her for that big, you know, that stadium show in New York. And so here she was, you know, on a random Dynamite, and it's Mercedes Moné. So that was the only real surprise to me. And, you know, I was thinking, like many, this is hers to lose, kind of the same way I'm looking at Obafemi in The King of the Ring. You look at it and you go, this is his to lose, right? She's got to be the favorite here. But there were a couple of people on one of my streams the other night. We were talking and going back and forth. And they floated a scenario that I like, And I could see it happening too, but I like it, which is that we end up with a final in this tournament of Mercedes against Athena. Because the finals of both of these tournaments will be taking place at Forbidden Door, right? You want a big match in the final round. Mercedes and Athena, they've had one match together on television. It was very good. Mercedes won. So this would be a rematch of that. I think that would be a hell of a final. And, you know, I was thinking, well, Mercedes is going to win again. Maybe not. Maybe not. And here's my mindset on this. I don't believe Willow Nightingale's injury is a work. I don't think it's a phony injury. I think she is hurt. It's a real shoulder injury. And again, she didn't just pull out of the Owen. I mean, they had a stripper of the TBS title. I think she's from Long Island, so I'm sure she was looking forward to wrestling on that show. Her family was going to be there. I don't think that's a work. If that's the case, then that tells me that the plan was never for Mercedes to be in this tournament. Her being in the tournament was something that was like a plan B. It was never planned from day one. So she doesn't necessarily have to win this tournament. I think we may be looking at Mercedes and Athena with Athena winning. And then we have the redemption pay-per-view in July. I think ultimately Mercedes is going to end up with that championship. What if she wins the championship before we even get to London? What if she beats Tekla on that show in Montreal and she wins the belt? And it ends up with Athena challenging her again in the rubber match for the championship at All In. That I like. That I can get behind. So whether or not that happens, we'll have to see who goes to the finals of this thing. I can't imagine Mercedes gets bounced before she gets to the finals. And then I mentioned the Will Ospreay-Mark Davis match. Great main event on Wednesday. Everybody and their mother showed up in this thing. It was the Death Riders trying to counteract the Callis family people back and forth. Just a great match. Now, tomorrow night, Dynamite has its summer blockbuster episode with two more Owen tournament matches. Swerve Strickland against Brody King, which is a rematch from Revolution in March, which Swerve won. He's going to win this one, too. And Suri is flying in to the United States from Japan. She is going to be taking on Sky Blue. Maybe. It's a curious choice considering Suri announced that she was taking a month off due to a neck injury. She announced this right before she was announced for the Owen. Tony Khan then said that he would hold off on her match for a little bit to give her more time to heal. It sounds like she's not fully there yet. Speaking to Tokyo Sports, she said her neck is not quite 100% and that her Spark Rush partner, Takumi Iroha, will also be making the trip to the U.S. to be in her corner. This is what she said. I'm not yet in a state where my neck is in perfect shape for my comeback in America. We also got permission from AEW, and this time Takumi will accompany us at our second. If anything happens to me, she'll come in as a pinch hitter. I'm in a tag team called Spark Rush with Takumi, and I hope to get advice from Chono together this time. And the legend himself, Masahiro Chono, he was, I guess, heading up the interview. And he said to Suri, I don't recommend that you step into the ring. There's still more than 10 years left to do after this. If things go wrong, you might end up missing a long time or suffering a serious injury. Don't rush, right? If Iroha can make the most of Suri-chan's chance, both stages will go up. And that's translated from Japanese, if that sounds a little weird. I second Chono's advice. I think Chono knows what he's talking about. If she's bringing her partner along as a backup, probably better to just let her step in, which she may have to do anyway if Suri can't get medically cleared when she gets here. Now we got to talk about TNA. Two TNA stars asked for and were granted their releases this past week as the exodus continues in this company. One of those people is a former TNA world champion, Steve Macklin. On Sunday, TNA published an article on its website confirming that these two names, are gone from the company, saying TNA Wrestling has come to terms on the release of Myla Grace and Steve Macklin, effective immediately. We wish them the best in their future endeavors. And Macklin later confirmed his release, saying, last week I requested my release from TNA. I put my blood, sweat, and tears into everything that I've done over the last 5 years. And I'll always be thankful for my time there. But now it is time to stack bodies. See you soon. And Macklin just signed an extension to his existing deal with the company in January. So that's not even 6 months ago. Not even 6 months later, he's asking for his release. And per Fightful Select, Macklin had hoped to keep the word of his departure quiet, but TNA issued a press release announcing it anyway. They rarely do that and did not consult Myla Grace or Macklin ahead of the decision. And to be fair, I mean, they're under no obligation to honor that. And like, if someone wants out and they let them out, they're within their rights, TNA is, within their rights to announce that and not respect their wishes. So what? They can announce it themselves? Or worse, they could just debut as a surprise on somebody else's show. Like, I'm not going to fault TNA for that. I'll actually give them a little bit of credit. Because if this were WWE or even AEW, a lot of times you ask for your release, they ain't going to give it to you. Right? They're going to bench you. They're going to sit you on the sidelines. They're going to make you wait out your deal. In this case, they were like, okay, you want out? We'll let you out. The Fightful also reported that Macklin had been outspoken about his creative frustrations since last year and is one of several talents that did not believe the TNA product had improved since moving to AMC earlier this year. The company's pay scale was also an issue internally, but the majority of TNA talent are no longer on full-time deals, even after the move to a new network. That's one hell of a departure for Macklin. You know, telling his boss, if you saw that last appearance he made on TV a few weeks ago, telling his boss to go sit in the cuck chair and then leaving. It's true. I don't know why Carlos Silva sees the need to always be sitting out there at ringside, but there he is, and he's in his little hat and everything, and he's sitting in the cuck chair. Look, there's been talk about TNA's pay scale for a while now, or talents either signing short-term deals or working on per-appearance deals and not even on contracts. This has been an issue for a while now, and there was hope that that might change after they signed the AMC deal. The AMC deal, I don't think they ever came out and directly said it, but the reports at the time were that this deal was for as much as $30 million, or $10 million a year for 3 years, I believe is what was reported. If they do have money like that coming in, it doesn't seem to be going to the talent, or the talent, you know, the talent budget, because if they were being paid well, they would not be asking for their release. They've lost a lot of people over the past, I would say, 12 to 18 months. Joe Hendry, right? That was a given, the way the WWE was using him on NXT. I think they grabbed him away from TNA before his contract there was even up, right? The benefits of a partnership with WWE. They worked out a deal. His contract wasn't even up yet, and they got him anyway. Jordynne Grace, right, one of the top stars of that Knockouts division, former Knockouts champion, she was another one. Although in her case, it felt like she had done all that there was to do. I mean, she had basically outgrown TNA. And meanwhile, she's been in WWE now for what, like a year and a half? They've done shit with her. They've done nothing. Josh Alexander probably would have left a lot sooner, but the story on him at the time is that they had rolled over his option, even though he did not want them to. He wanted to explore free agency. They rolled him over anyway. He was stuck there for another year. At the end of that year, he finally left, and he ended up going to AEW. The Rascals, they all bailed. Some of them weren't even working on contracts. But then the controversy happened with Trey Miguel. Old social media posts, you know, got dug up. So while the rest of the Rascals, they went on to AEW, he ended up, you know, basically having to crawl back to TNA. The only reason he's even there right now is because AEW fired him before he even started. Jake Something, he went to AEW. That's a weird one. How do you not do more with someone like Jake Something? Right? Just look at the dude. Can't find more for him to do? I know he got hurt once or twice, but come on. Mance Warner and Steph DeLander, that was not an amicable departure there. Steph DeLander had a lot to say about TNA after, including the fact that apparently they don't even have their own medical team. Ace Austin, he left. Danny Luna. Danny Luna is another one who asked for her release. It's a long list. They just cannot keep talent. And it's about to get even worse because Mike Santana's contract is up next month. And he just so happens to be the TNA World Heavyweight Champion right now. And it sounds like he's as good as gone. WrestleVotes reported this week that there's interest from the WWE side, which, I mean, water is wet and Dana White is bald. Okay, tell me something I don't already know. But their report says the WWE would like him to be on their main roster before the end of 2026. So whether he comes in and starts in NXT and is there for 2 months, they want him on the main roster before this year is over. That is the belief. Now, Santana has appeared on WWE television in NXT matches half a dozen different times over the past year. It was a no-brainer that he was headed to WWE as soon as he was free. And that's going to be a quality pickup for them. I can't sit here and tell you that he's going to be in the position he's in now in TNA, you know, where he's going to be a world heavyweight champion. I think he has the potential to be. I don't necessarily see WWE utilizing him in that way, but it's going to be a quality pickup for them regardless. You know, Mike Santana, he was our world champion in House of Glory for 554 days. I had the privilege of calling most of those matches. This is a guy who went from being in a tag team to being off for 14 months. He was rehabbing from a torn ACL that he suffered in AEW. He came back in the best shape of his life as a single star because he wasn't satisfied where he was. He's like, you know, he's done the tag team thing for so long, but he wants to be a singles. He knows that he can achieve more, even if other people don't think he can. And he's also now 3 years sober. Like, his story is a very inspirational one. So again, if he ends up going to WWE, that's going to be a quality pickup. I hope that they use him in the right way, but that's going to be a big loss for TNA. And then I said, not just Mike Santana, they're in trouble because there's Leon Slater. Leon Slater is one of their hottest young stars, 21 years old, now tied for the longest reigning X Division champion of all time. The belief is they did not want him breaking the record and took the belt off of him because they think he's leaving at the end of this current contract for either WWE or AEW. Now, if they really thought he was headed to WWE, right? And he might be. He might end up going to WWE. He's been on their television just like Santana. They had him on the John Cena retirement show. He was on that Saturday night's main event show teaming with Javon Evans against AJ Styles and Dragon Lee. Clearly, they have an interest in him. Clearly, they want him under contract. But if they really thought he was going to end up in WWE, okay, then they would let him break the record. Because what difference does it make? Then he gets to come to WWE, who's in business with TNA, as the longest reigning TNA X Division champion of all time. I really don't think that TNA would give a shit. That tells me that there is a more than decent chance that he signs with AEW. And if there's any chance of that, right, maybe it doesn't happen, but if there's any chance of that, well, we can't have him breaking the record. So we'll take the belt off of him. If they lose Santana and Slater back to back, that is a massive loss for TNA. If they lose one of those guys, it's a big loss. But if they lose both of them, that's a massive loss. Now, they still have Matt and Jeff Hardy, who were their big draws. Mustafa Ali, in my opinion, he should be their next world champion, if they were smart. They just signed Fabian Aichner, the former Giovanni Vinci from WWE, who was not a big name in the company, but is super talented. He apparently just signed a deal that will keep him there at least through the summer, is what was reported, which not exactly a long-term commitment there. But he's a talented guy. I don't know that he's a guy you're going to build around, but he's a talented guy for them to have. Ricky Sosa could be the next hot thing for them. So they have talented people wrestling for them. There are certain people you look at like, okay, they should build around this person. They should build around that person. But, I mean, they just never seem to have their shit together. If they can't afford to pay people enough to keep them or sign them to real contracts, not 90-day deals, that doesn't speak very well to the financial commitment that Anthem has made to this company or to the money that they are supposedly getting from this television deal. Something is going on here that people are actively choosing to walk away. I think the heart and soul of that company was ripped out when they fired Scott D'Amore last year. I mean, you had people on the roster who I think wrote an open letter to Anthem management talking about their unhappiness over that whole thing. And it fell on deaf ears. And I think as big as it was for them to get that AMC television deal earlier this year, and the WWE partnership has definitely benefited them in some ways, not always, but in some ways, I think when Scott D'Amore got fired and left, And I think it was actually 2 years ago. Not, I said last year. I think it was 2 years ago. But when that happened, you know, a big piece of the heart and soul of that company went with him. And I don't know that they've ever really fully recovered from that. And per the New York Post, the investigation into Hulk Hogan's death has now been completed. And according to the cops, there was no evidence found of any criminal wrongdoing. This is from the story. It says Hulk Hogan's death was the result of natural causes, as cops revealed a nearly 11-month probe into the legend's passing yielded no evidence of criminal wrongdoing on Friday. Rob Shaw, a spokesperson for the Clearwater Police Department in Florida, said in a statement that following interviews with witnesses and reviews of various recordings over much of last year, investigators are now officially calling Hogan's case an attended natural death. Hogan passed away on July 24, 2025, at his Clearwater, Florida residence, and a 72-page report released on Friday shed further details on how the wrestling icon spent his final days. Investigators wrote in the document that several close to Hogan told them that he had been in rough shape following multiple recent surgeries. His wife, Skye, told police that her husband had a spinal fusion surgery on his neck about 6 weeks before his death and a cardiac surgery 3 weeks before to fix a valve. He was also diagnosed with chronic lymphocytic leukemia and had been undergoing chemotherapy for it. On the day of his death, Hogan had been with his wife and two healthcare workers when they suddenly noticed he had stopped breathing while sitting in his recliner. Skye called 911 while one of the medical professionals administered CPR. Hogan was ultimately transported to a nearby hospital where he was pronounced dead. Authorities said at the time that they did not suspect foul play. However, Hogan's daughter, Brooke, said publicly multiple times in the wake of her father's death that she had significant questions about his passing. Cops, though, wrote in the report that a private autopsy done on Hogan revealed he died exclusively from compelling natural disease with no reasonable traumatic or terminal toxicologic contributions. Following an exhaustive review of the statements, medical records, surveillance footage from within the residence, and a visual inspection of Mr. Bollea's body, there has been no evidence to indicate the death of Terry Bollea was anything other than natural. And through the course of the investigation, there has been no evidence to indicate any criminal wrongdoing related to his death. This case will be closed and will be considered solved, non-criminal. So that ends that. I don't think that Brooke is of the same mindset. She's been very vocal about a lot of very suspicious things that she's heard and has been told to her about what was going on in the house at around that time. You know, it's tough because I know that she didn't really have a relationship there towards the end with her, I think either one of her parents. And she didn't want to be involved, even like she wanted to be cut out of the will and all that stuff. She just wanted to be completely divorced from the whole thing, but it's still her dad. And she still, you know, cared about him and she has suspicions. You know, she hears things and, you know, it mentioned private autopsy. And I think that's part of her issue is that she would like to get a look at it. But I think she said she's worried that if she's ever able to look at it, they may force her to sign a non-disclosure agreement first, you know, so that she can't, you know, comment on it. But she would love to get a look at that report. She doesn't necessarily believe that everything that was said here is true. We may never know. They consider the case closed, and that's the end of that. One more item here concerning another legend, somebody who should be in the WWE Hall of Fame like Hulk Hogan, but is not. That is Rick Martel. Remember the model Rick Martel? I guess it depends on how old you are. Some of you maybe remember him as the AWA World Champion back in the 80s. Some of you may remember him as part of Strike Force, not the MMA promotion. Some of you may remember him as the model. He had a great little resurgence there even in the late 90s during the Monday Night War in WCW. Back in like 98, he was back. And then unfortunately, he had this catastrophic knee injury in a match with Booker T. I don't think it was on Nitro. I think it was on one of their pay-per-views. And that effectively ended his career. But Martel is someone who absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame. But he did a sit-down interview. I don't know. It looked like they were at some kind of convention. They were like sitting right next to each other. And it was like a little 15-minute interview that he did with former WWE announcer Sean Mooney on his Primetime with Sean Mooney channel on YouTube. And in the course of the interview, he made a comment that people, I guess, misinterpreted that he had rejected a previous invitation by WWE to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And he clarified that that was not the case. He posted, or someone posted on his behalf on his social media. In 2015, I was offered to appear at Fan Access in San Francisco and attend the Hall of Fame as a spectator. Flattered, I still turned it down as I was not ready to go back to wrestling for appearances like I am now. I didn't turn down an offer to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Thank you. And his friend and historian Pat LaPrade, he also chimed in on this. He said, there seems to be some confusion about whether Rick was ever offered induction into the WWE Hall of Fame and turned it down. Here's what actually happened. In 2015, he was invited to appear at Access in San Jose and attend the ceremony as a guest. He declined that invitation. That's what he was referring to in his interview with Sean Mooney. However, he was never offered induction into the WWE Hall of Fame and therefore never turned down such an honor. Martel recently confirmed this himself during a French language interview with Mark Blondin. Hopefully this clears up the misunderstanding once and for all. And you know, now the demolition is finally in, Martel is the next one. We got to lobby to get him in. We got to start a campaign to get Rick Martel in the Hall of Fame. King Kong Bundy needs to go in also, but he's dead. So I don't, you know, he's got time. I don't think he's in any kind of rush. But again, some of these guys, man, they're not getting any younger here. So we got to work on the Martel one. Anyway, you can work on some questions if you want to send them in. I know I've kind of gotten away from it the last few weeks, but if you want to send in questions, you could always email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You could tweet me on X, @solemonster. Just use the hashtag uncrowned. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to submit for the show, those are always welcome. Of course, make sure you're subscribed to the show. We have a dedicated feed for the Uncrowned Wrestling Show. You could also listen to the show on the official Ariel Helwani Show feed. Either or, as long as you guys are tuning in, that's all that matters. I'm going to be back with you next Tuesday for a brand new installment of the Uncrowned Wrestling Show. And so until then, I wish you all a great week. And as far as the news is concerned, if you didn't know, now you know. Have a great one. I'll see you guys back here next Tuesday for more Uncrowned. Take care.